When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to another special bonus edition of the Paul Ryder Tapes. This episode is very, very special. It's special because so many people have said, are you going to do a bonus episode with this person? Please, please, we really want to hear from this person. And I think it's probably because he doesn't really do interviews. And so his story has never really been told. I'm talking about the keyboard meister of the Happy Mondays, the very original keyboard meister, Mr. Paul Davis, who is better known as PD. And, oh, this interview is probably one of the most poignant ones of the series for me. I don't know why, but he's a really, really special soul. Lovely, lovely man, Paul Davis, and rarely, rarely gives press interviews. So here we go, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Paul Davis. Really, really grateful to you. Thank you. You're a really important part of the story. It's a bit like a painting, isn't it? Without one colour, it's not quite the same, is it? Without, you know, if you don't have a green in your painting, it doesn't look the same. And I kind of feel like you're kind of like that, really. So, first of all, can you remember the very first time that being in the band was suggested to you?
Daz invited me down, Gary Whelan, and we went to see them, and I was fascinated with them. I thought Paul was really cool with the bass sound. I've never heard a bass close up, you know, with a live band, because I was a kid at school, and I was just madly influenced. We became friends, and I just joined. I can't remember how it happened. I used to go and watch them rehearse.
Somebody, I can't remember who, I think it was Gaz, or was it Mark? I can't remember. Somebody said that you said, oh, I'll play the bass. And no, you can't, because Paul's playing the bass. Oh, I'll do the guitar. No, you can't, because, oh, I'll do the keyboards then. Oh, all right, I'll learn it then. Is that how it happened?
Something like that. I didn't want to take the bass, but I used to have one at home, and I was, you know, but he was the bass player. He was the one.
What was your first impression of him?
Quiet, nice kid, you know, but could play bass. So I was hooked on him. I went to see them, and the first gig they did at the community centre in Wardler, I was taking photos, and we'd get in the car and we'd drive about, he'd come and pick me up, we'd go and watch bands, and he never lost his temper, and he was never drunk, and he was like a wise man.
Did you play that first gig?
No, I didn't have the keyboard then. I took some photos, yeah.
So when you were taking photos that day, did you think that you might be joining them, or did you just think you were a photographer at the time?
No, not a photographer. I was just like 17, 16, having fun with the band.
So do you remember the day when they said, oh, come on, you come and join us and play keyboards?
No, but I'm glad they did. Even though I couldn't play, they're all patient with me. I was a bit slow. And they'd all, you know, they could play and everything. And I was a slow learner. But I got there, we got it together.
I mean, you've probably written one of the most memorable keyboard lines. That keyboard line in Step On wasn't from John Congas, was it? That was you, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And that's like one of the most probably well-known keyboard lines in Britain and the world, really. And you didn't even get any royalties for that, did you? Because they got all the publishing, didn't they?
Well, they write John Congas, it was his song. Yeah.
I know, that's kind of not fair, really. So do you remember when you
when you first thought, oh, hang on, this is actually working and this is going to be successful? Do you remember that moment?
It took a few years and it was a shock when you look up. I always had my head down, concentrating, too nervous to look at the crowd. And the only time I looked up was at Glastonbury. And I was like, wow.
So how did you feel before you were going on stage at those big gigs?
You don't know how big it is until the crowd, until you see the crowd and the room and, you know, from the sound check to the night, it just gets bigger and more different.
And who were you, would you say you were closest to in those early days in the band? Like, was everybody close or were you kind of closer with Paul?
I was close with guys from school. We always stuck together and I befriended Paul and Sean, but I hung out with Paul and Sean. But Paul was just different. He never shouted or lost his temper. He just kept it calm.
He said that you were singularly one of the funniest people that he's ever met, like your sense of humour. It's like you really bonded over your sense of humour. It was like a kind of shorthand between you, I think, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Right, it's Paul.
Yeah.
Do you have any specific memories or anecdotes you can think of, like funny things that happened that you could tell, funny stories about your time with him?
Yeah, when we used to rehearse in the Boardwalk in Manchester, I never had an amp and I had to use Paul's amp coming, you know, plugged into his. And every time I hit a bum note or went out of tune, he'd just glare at me and I'd stop because you're on private territory near his amp. You know, he used to stand there proudly. And I had to have a little keyboard stand near him. And he was uncomfy, you know, with me there playing out of tune and out of time. But stuff happens, you learn better. And then I spoke to him on stage one day because I was dead nervous. And he ignored me, but he was grinning. That was him all over, you know. He kept very... He was just a quiet, nice kid. Yeah.
What was it that you'd said to him that he ignored?
Something like, are you okay or what are we doing here? I don't know. It was something nervous anyhow, that's why he didn't answer me.
What was it like going into the studio for the first time when you recorded the first single? You with Mike Pickering?
Quick, good. And when you hear it, we drive home with a cassette in the car. You know how it's going and everything. And you just be smirking at 6 a.m. driving home.
Do you remember playing the first gig at G-Mex? The first big gig there?
Unreal. I saw some footage of it. And I was like, I'm glad I was in the background because... I didn't play too good on the night. But what a night, all the young kids. Sure. I stayed in the Midland Hotel and I was looking out the window, all the kids and girls going to the show. And I spotted my dad in the crowd. I spotted my dad from 4 floors up because I didn't want him to go and he bought himself a ticket off a tout. So I was like, wow, you know, hometown gig.
Why did he not want your mum and dad to go to the gig?
Because it was full of kids and, you know, maybe they might not have liked it, it might have been too loud for them.
When did you first leave the band? Did you leave, was it when the whole thing fell apart?
In 92.
Right, so you were there through Pills and Thrills and, yes, did you go to Barbados as well? You did,
yeah.
Obviously. How did you find recording in LA with Paul Oakenfold?
Something else. Really good. Yeah. Really good.
Do you remember what you used to do outside of the studio in LA?
I wish I did, but I was drinking and partying, you know, wasn't paying attention. And I got a lot of help off producers and engineers. We've been playing, because I can't remember what I did, but they'd say, we like that, play it again, and they couldn't, and they'd be sequenced and cut down. And so I've had a lot of help off a lot of people, including the band, but... I learned a different way of playing.
Paul talks a lot about having a complex because he wasn't a classically trained musician. he felt like he was an imposter because he couldn't read music. And it took him 40 years to realise that it actually didn't matter. Were you the same?
I had the notes written on my keyboard, you know, in the letters written across the keyboard, every note. And if the smoke machine came on or the strobe light came on, I couldn't see what I was doing. I was in the background because I didn't want any lights on me. I just thought I was a beginner all the time.
Even though you wrote one of the most memorable keyboard lines of the 90s, you still... So obviously drugs were a big part of the whole Mondays thing and led to Paul having a lot of trouble, which he's been very open and honest about. Do you feel like that came with the band and that the band wouldn't have been what they were without the drugs to fuel it all?
I never thought about that question. It's just... it happens in all walks of life. We were just in a band with a bit of exposure and it made the news, or it's news to people. But a lot of things happen like that. You know, I never think about it. I'm just glad I got by.
Yeah.
Do you have any regrets about being in the band or leaving the band when you did, or do you feel like everything was how it was meant to be?
I just got out because I wasn't feeling too good. I was I was doing too much going out and staying out and clubbing when I should have been rehearsing. And then something happened and I thought, I can't do it. I'd rather be home with my beagle. I just got a dog we came back from Japan. And I was like, I don't think I can do it again.
Let's just go back to, you went to Barbados and was that a good experience for you? Mark said it wasn't a very good experience for him. Paul said he loved Barbados. How was Barbados for you?
It was great. You know, it was studio with the pool. You couldn't make it up. Nice food. You didn't know it was your last album, but it felt like it's your last song, the way things happened out there. But I wish the lyrics would have been kept on, the original suffering and the problems we're having, because it was redone, the lyrics.
When you came back from Barbados, everything went wrong with Factory, and then a record company came to see you and do a deal with you, and then that all went pear-shaped, didn't it? Do you remember how you felt when that deal never came off and Sean didn't show up that day?
That's the day I left.
And how did you feel when you weren't doing the band anymore, when the band weren't existing anymore? How did that affect your life?
I just felt like a loser, as I'd lost something really good. And then I didn't think about it. I was too concerned about myself and other people. And I think we all needed a bit of clearance to have a good think. But you can have a think and it can last 20 years, can't it, sometimes, when you've not made a choice. When you keep making a decision every night, but you've got no choice the day after to accept what you've got. And things can't happen sometimes.
Yeah, I know, it was horrible. But you did get a chance to be back in the band again in 2012. And, the first that Paul knew of it was when somebody emailed me and said, oh, have you seen this in The Sun? And it was an article in The Sun saying the band were getting back together with all the original members, and no one had asked Paul. And I don't know, had they asked you at that point, or did you read about it before you knew?
I heard about it the week before.
Oh, did you?
I got a phone call, yeah.
And how did that make you feel? Did you jump at the chance, or were you hesitant to do that?
It seemed a good idea, but I didn't know if I could play and be with them. I've not been with them for 20 years since then. And it was like None of them had changed. And Paul lived in LA, Matt and Gaz in Canada, and me and Mark still at home. And it was like, wow, there's, you know, lot to catch up on.
Can you remember when you first saw them again at that meeting, like how you felt, what happened?
Well, I'd heard about Sean because he was always in the paper, and he turned up with black leather gloves on, a leather jacket, sunglasses. I was like, wow, trying not to be noticed. And Paul turned up, big smile on his face, and we just chatted. It was all very rushed and everything. We got talking on the bus. But I think we're all a little nervous. I was, anyhow.
Yeah, I'm sure everybody was. Everybody was. And by that time, Rowetta was part of the picture. You kept in touch with Rowetta over the years, didn't you?
Yeah. Yeah, we used to go out to places with Rowetta, watch bands and...
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
So how did that go for you, that reunion tour, when everybody was back together with the original lineup? What was that like for you?
It was like a matchbox turned into a lighter. It was just like a light. I have done something, you know, I felt like when you see the crowd again, it's just funny to be the same people doing something that's appreciated.
Yeah, and you stayed with the band for about a year you carried on?
6 months.
Yeah. Do you have regrets about leaving?
I didn't know I left. It was like the management at the time were a bit freaked me out. I've never been in a situation like, I don't think the rest of them were, but they accepted what was constantly changing. And I just said, I didn't even ring, I said, I'm not coming in. It was simple as that. I'm not being messed about.
In terms of Paul and Sean and that feuding dynamic, how did you feel about that? Were you kind of unnerved by that? Did it bother you that they were always at each other's throats?
They weren't that bad. From the beginning, there were two separate lads, two brothers, two different people. And Paul was always in charge. You know, Paul would make the decision. And Sean thinks he's made the decision. It was just like a power, you know, you would stick with the band, the bass player, the guitarist, the keyboard player, the drummer, and the maraca player, Bez, would do the music, and Sean would do his side. It was just like, that's how it went. They always sort of, well, it wasn't often. It was just quiet, mainly. They just had a few words. I can't remember any big blow-ups.
Do you remember tension on the stage, like when, because there's lots of talk, Sean like muttering under the microphone, winding Paul up, and did that bother you or affect you in any way?
I'd just rather be there for the music instead of Sean doing all that chatting between. It got a bit, I've not joined them for a while, so when this was like, how they come across now, I was like, wow, things have changed.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you put the mic near you on stage. You know, I've never spoken on a mic on a stage. I didn't want to do it on the spot then.
Are there any particular gigs that stick out in your memory as being particularly good or particularly bad?
The G-Max, when you look at the stage and you look at Paul on the far right, Mark's in front of me and Gaz is next to me, but you're about 10 foot apart. You know, a big stage, and I remember that when we supported Simply Red years ago in about 86, but the stage was huge and we couldn't do eye signals. And I was waiting for cues on the keyboard for Paul to turn around and nod me. Then when we got the technology, I didn't fall out of time. So they put up with me for a lot.
So what's your kind of overriding memory of Paul now? I mean, obviously, no one's going to see him again. What's like, when you think about him, what do you feel?
There's a couple of bass players alike. He's one of them. And Peter Hook. And Paul took me to go and watch bands. And he totally changed my life. And we stuck together and we all went our own way when we were touring, you know. We're all pretty private. We weren't all partying every night. You'd go to your room and chill out because you're catching up on sleep. Or you'd had enough. But Paul was just like, I looked up to him a lot, because he'd always get you home, you know, if you went out with him. And we always listened to the radio, John Peel, and he'd take me to record shops. We'd talk about music. And there's a song on Factory Records, Marcel King. I can't remember what it's called, but he played me that. Marcel King, I can't remember the title. But it was like, wow, this has come from that club. And this is before we were signed to Factory. It's like, it's gone well. It's like a little made-up story, that's true. A big made-up story. Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. I miss him. Yeah. And July the 15th, when I heard the news, I had a migraine, I was rough, and my phone kept ringing. And I was dreading it, and I picked it up, and it was a message off Gaz. Just said, horse is dead. And I puked up. Dreams, you know, all music and friendship seems to go.
Do you remember where you were at the time? Were you at home when you heard?
I was at home.
Yeah. And what was your first thought when you thought, like, where did your mind go?
I felt as though I was split up from him. Even if we met up today, we'd still be the same, you know. We'd be quiet and chatty, had a dog, we'd talk dogs. I don't really talk about the past, I just... Just his death was like... You know.
Yeah, no, it's tough. What did you think of the funeral?
I had to be there, and it was nice. See, McCulloch sang on it, and I saw Linda, his mum. Spoke to Sean. Spoke to a few people, and I went to the chapel. I did the whole day.
I don't know why, but it really did mean a lot. That I was so happy when I saw you there. I thought, oh, Paul will be really, really, really pleased.
I thought he didn't like me, Andrew. I had the impression none of them liked me in the band.
Not at all, no. He never said a bad word. He was always going on about how funny you were, like your sense of humour and how hilarious you were, and you just had like this shorthand between you, and you kind of read each other's minds a bit, and you just were in sync about humour, really. Yeah. No. He really loved you. I know he did. Like when you were working with him in 2012, that tour, you were back to how it was before then, weren't you? Like you weren't beefing with him. You weren't beefing with anybody, were you?
What we used to do in the sound checks, after the sound check, because we both grew up and a bit, the logic was to have a kip in the afternoon. We both take our medication and a cup of tea, because we both didn't drink alcohol. And he was on his Red Bull. And we'd lie on the floor in the dressing room with a pillow. And I looked up one day and it was really stupid because I nearly fell asleep. Yo, just wanted a rest and we were chatting.
Yeah, Paul's the only person I know that could have a Red Bull when he wants to have a sleep and still go to sleep.
Yeah.
He used to love those Red Bulls, didn't he?
Yeah.
Are there any other thoughts that you have, any other stories that you'd like to tell?
Just being taken to bands with him, and he'd know what bands. And even if you didn't hear them on the radio, he would have heard about them. And he'd take me to all the different clubs, you know, you can do in a car. And next to the Hacienda, there used to be a parking spot, a big, big lot, where you could just park up before you got on the Hacienda. And we used to get there early, you know, and hear the roof in the Hacienda vibrating, the glass ceiling. And we'd just be smirking. And we'd go in, and I was just like, wow. You know, he took me to see things in my own town that I didn't know existed. And he continued to take me to places with the band.
Was he a bit... Was he older than you?
2 years older, or three, I think.
So when you're at that age, like now that's nothing, but when you're that age, it's quite a lot. It's quite a big age gap, isn't it? So was he kind of like a bit of an older brother to you, would you say?
I'd say that, yeah. Definitely. Yeah. He taught me how to drive, and, you know, I used to watch him on the gear stick and the handbrake when we're in car parks. He taught me balance, you know, how to operate a car. And that's what I still do today. I play guitar. I listen to music. All the things he started me off on and I was interested in, I still do the similar things.
What kind of music were you into in those days? Like when you first met him, what were your influences then?
I was into the Beatles and the Sex Pistols. My sister got me into the Smiths. Paul took me to see them and he got me into New Order. So I was a big fan of them, still am today. And I enjoyed every minute, but it seems so far away, but it doesn't. I'm still, well, some of us are still doing it. I'm not, you know, in a band. I'd like to be. I'm still doing music at home.
Oh, do you? You still do music now?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Are you doing it on your own or are you doing it with other people?
A couple of other people would be mates.
Oh, brilliant. Oh, that's good. Well, thank you so much for talking to us and thanks for doing it on the last minute as well. Really, really appreciate it. All right.
Okay.
Lots of love.
Okay.
Thank you so much and I'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, bye.
All right, take care. Bye.
Bye.
That's all we have for you this week. Oh, he's brilliant, isn't he, PD? We are playing out with a track that Paul did with his French collaborator in Los Angeles, Eddie Granfier. And we're going to be talking to Eddie here on the show very soon. And we're going to be playing some more of the tracks that they did together. They did some really amazing stuff. I'm busy gathering a load of other stuff that no one's ever heard before. And we're going to be releasing a compilation of Paul's other material really soon. We're going to be back again next week, same time, same place, with another episode. Please do me a favour and hit the subscribe button. I know it's really boring, but we won't be spamming you. And you're going to be the first to hear about any new content. And please join our Patrons Club by going to patreon.com/thepaulrydertapes. Patrons get first dibs on being in our live streams. And we've got quite a few that I'm lining up. A really, really special one coming up very soon. So don't miss out. Special hello to our Sunday Club members who join us every Sunday for our Fab Live chats at 8 o'clock on YouTube. You know who you are. Amazing community. Love you all. Have a brilliant week, everybody. Thanks again to all of you for being here. Big, big thanks go
to Paul Davies, also known as PD, for being such a good sport and giving us his time and his wisdom and sharing his beautiful soul with us today. And of course, as usual, big love and thanks to the great man himself who's inspired all of this. It's of course the late, great Paul Anthony Ryder.
And who to spank and leave. We know who to love and who to thank and bleed. I know when to strike and who to love and leave. Get on up for dirty days. I know when to walk and when to stop and breathe. We know when to talk and when to stop and leave.
Amen.
I know he's a snake, knows how to sing and read.
Get on up for dirty days.
Don't know who I am.
Don't be down, 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 don't